everyone. I hope you're having a great start to the week. I want to share a message with you all this week about encouragement, getting out of your comfort zone, taking on a challenge, and remembering that you can do hard things. Now, for regular listeners of the show, if you've listened to this podcast for a long time, or if you've read the Power Hour book, then you probably are familiar with my motto, you can do hard things. Now, the reason I say you can do hard things is because often when I deliver talks, there's always a Q&A section. And often when I'm asked about motivation or about mindset and my approach to taking on any challenge in my life, personal or professional, I always come back to this idea of you can do hard things, because often what I find is that people are, they're asking me to give them guidance or advice or some top tip or sometimes a hack or a shortcut to make something easier. You know, we always want things to be easy. Of course we do, whether that's a physical challenge like a race, or whether that's a mental challenge or something that requires discipline and something that we find difficult, we always want to make it easier for ourselves. Of course we do. So if there's a hack or a shortcut, the temptation is to think, great, I'm going to do that. But I think sometimes when we acknowledge the fact that some things are just hard, and they're always going to be hard, it doesn't matter how long you've been doing it or how much time you put in. You know, I think we're sometimes told a lie that, you know, practice makes perfect, or that the more times you do something, you're just going to improve exponentially. And it's not always true. Some things, for me anyway, in my experience, some things are difficult. And they will always be difficult. And so instead of waiting for that thing to become easy, I instead decide to accept that you can do hard things. You can do a challenge regardless of whether you find it difficult or not. And so that's really where my endurance running comes in. You know, pre-2020, pre the pandemic, I used to do a lot of races. I used to run a lot of endurance races. And so I think that maybe the misconception is that I'm a really, really great endurance runner. And so that must be why I do all these races around the world. When in fact, I'm not a particularly good endurance runner. I'd say I'm probably more natural at sprinting or short distances. But I've really worked hard over the last few years, over the last 9 years actually, to improve my running, to improve my endurance. And also I accept that I find it hard. I'm always going to find it hard. Running a marathon is always going to be hard, but you can do hard things. And I basically applied that same discipline when it came to writing the Power Hour book. You know, there were times when I thought, oh my goodness, this is such an overwhelming task. I've never written anything longer than 10,000 words, let alone 70,000. But I just broke it down in the same way. You know, I had a schedule, I had to be disciplined, I had to stick to it, and I had to accept that this is going to be difficult sometimes, but you can do hard things. So the reason I'm revisiting this message and sharing this with you all is because I've definitely been feeling over the last few months, as things start to feel as though the world is opening up again and we're able to leave our homes for a start, but we're also able to leave our country. We're able to travel more easily again, and we're able to do in-person events again and join big groups and big communities. I've definitely had a real urge, a real craving for new things, new adventures, new countries, new menus, new languages, new foods. I want to go and see new places that I've never, ever been to before. Now, I understand and appreciate that I'm incredibly fortunate, I'm incredibly privileged to be in a position that I can go to different places around the world. I can work in different places. I've definitely created a career that allows me to pack up my stuff, literally, a mic, a laptop, whatever I need, a notebook, some trainers, and off I go. You know, I can kind of work at the moment quite flexibly and from anywhere, which is amazing. So that's definitely something that I'm exploring more this year, and something that I want to encourage others to think about and to consider, because for so many of us for the last few years, you know, the focus has been, maybe it's been work, maybe it's been home. And yeah, I think with a lot of the conversations that I have on this show, I'm so fortunate when I sit down and I listen to the wisdom that is shared by the many guests I've interviewed. And we've talked a lot over the last couple of years during the pandemic, during the different episodes, about really identifying what's important to us, about values, about regrets. I really remember the episode I did with Sam Conniff talking about uncertainty and regret. And yeah, I don't just record these episodes and then forget about it. You know, I really do reflect. I consider, okay, am I living a life that I truly want to? Am I living in alignment with the values that I have? Are the things I'm doing today taking me in the direction that I want to go in? So, all that to say, I'm going to be traveling a lot as much as possible and working and doing and exploring and seeking new adventures and new challenges. And that is what has led me to taking on my first ever trail race. So I'm going to be running a race at the end of May. It is with the Tribe Freedom Foundation and it's the Tribe Golden Island Half Marathon. So it's a 21K trail race, as I mentioned, and it is a climb. It is a vertical climb. I've never done a race like this before. I've run the distance before, but only on road. I've only done, you know, half marathons on the road. So it's going to be a real challenge physically, mentally, and it's also creating discipline in my life again, because my training, to be honest, for the last few months has been pretty sporadic. The last race that I did last year was the Hackney Half Marathon, and my training was pretty sporadic for that as well. So this is really a time for me to get disciplined again. I'm sticking to a training plan. And what I've noticed for myself when it comes to staying motivated to train for races, I know that when I have a race in the diary, I have a deadline that I'm working towards, when I can see progress week on week, whether it's no matter how big or small, and when I know that I'm going to feel the sense of achievement, so I'm going to complete something that's difficult. That those three things seem to just be the magic kind of secret sauce for me when it comes to motivation. So it's a deadline, progress and achievement. So those three things are what I have in my mind when I think about how I'm going to tackle this race. And so in today's episode, I've invited two of the three founders of the Tribe Foundation to share a little bit more about the race, but also about the charity, about the work that they do. As I've known about this charity for such a long time, and they do incredible work. And so I was really, really grateful and really excited when the opportunity came up to do this race with them in Croatia. I should have mentioned that it's in Croatia. So I'm going to leave all the info, everything you need to know if you want to join this race as well. It's in the show notes. If you're listening to this and thinking, yeah, you know what? I am in the same headspace right now. I want to explore new places. I want to get out of my comfort zone. I want to try something new. Often when I talk to people, they'll nod their head and agree. They're like, yes, Adrienne, I hear you. That is me too. But often it's difficult to take action and to actually commit to something. So this could be the opportunity or the adventure that you have been seeking. So I'll leave all the information in the show notes for you to find out absolutely everything about the race, when it is, where it is, how to sign up. There's still spaces available, so go quickly. I've also set up a Just Giving page. The link will be in the show notes as well. Any support that you can give would be fantastic. If you listen to the show each week, if you enjoy the podcast, then please consider making a donation, however big or small. All right, let's dive in to this week's episode with the founders of Tribe. Welcome to the Power Hour. I'm Adrienne Herbert, wellness coach, international speaker, and author. Each week, I speak to a variety of guests, from business founders to Olympic athletes, leading coaches, change makers, and innovators, to find out their daily habits, their rules to live by, and what motivates them to get up out of bed each day. Personally, I am on a mission to encourage, motivate, and inspire. So I hope that the Power Hour will help you to achieve your personal and professional goals. Rob and Tom, welcome to the Power Hour podcast. How are you doing?
Really well. Great to be here.
So well. Thanks so much for having us, Adrienne. We've been big fans for a long time.
It is my pleasure. And as I have two guests today, and we're still recording remotely, for the sake of the listeners and also myself, I'm going to try my best to use each of your names as much as possible so that the listeners will know who I'm talking to. So before we dive in, because I've got so much that I want to talk to you about today, we're going to talk about the Tribe Freedom Foundation. We're going to hear all about why you founded Tribe, what it's all about, the mission. We're also going to talk about Run for Love, a race that I am currently training to take part in later this year. And I cannot wait. We're going to move on to that. But I cannot wait to actually be racing with other runners again. I can't wait to be in a hot country. The motivation to train is real. And of course, all of the other work that you do and how it's been impacted by the pandemic. So
First up, Rob, could you start off, please, by telling listeners what the Tribe Freedom Foundation is all about?
Absolutely. So Tribe Freedom Foundation is a UK charity whose mission is to end modern slavery. The foundation started by myself, Tom and Guy, off the back of a long run we did 7 years ago called Run for Love. Run for Love was a 1,000-mile run across Eastern Europe. And the whole idea for the project was to try and run 1,000 miles in 30 days. And in doing so, to raise £250,000 for the first home in the UK that provided care for child trafficking victims. And that project was a really amazing run. I'm sure we'll talk more about it, but it involved a huge group coming together to run for this amazing cause. And we all took part in that. And off the back of that, we set up two things. The first was Tribe, which is a nutrition company. So we make amazing natural energy and protein products. But we also wanted to create more than just a product and more than just a brand. We wanted to have a mission at the heart of everything we did. And we set up the Tribe Freedom Foundation to continue the work of the first Run for Love and to continue our work to fight modern slavery. And so it sits alongside Tribe, the company, as a charity.
Well, thank you. And yes, you're right. We're definitely going to dive more into the race element and also into the work that you do. So Tom, going back a bit further, because you mentioned, you know, 7 years ago, you did this race. But I'd like to know from that, you know, how you really got started, because having an idea is one thing, you know, arguably it's the easiest part for lots of people. They have good ideas every day, but very few people have the courage or the will to execute on that idea or the vision and to actually create a plan and commit and say, okay, we're going to make this good idea into a movement, a company, an organization, whatever it is. So what were you all doing before? And was there a catalyst or something that made you all commit and say, okay, this is really important to us, we're going to make this happen?
I think the big thing was that in many ways, before we were all working, I was a lawyer, Rob was doing something similar, and Guy was working in banking. And Run for Love was in many ways kind of the first time we'd kind of really done something that was, you know, I suppose genuinely kind of entrepreneurial and genuinely involved kind of trying to build something, trying to rally people together, trying to create momentum around what we were doing. And I think just it was such an inspiring project and such a kind of motivating community of people that I think that gave us a huge confidence to say, wow, this is something we can actually do. So I think it was really the kind of success, energy, momentum of Run for Love that gave us everything in terms of how we took the idea of building a kind of community around plant-based nutrition and around fighting modern slavery. I think Run for Love was also really inspiring there as well, because I think the biggest thing the biggest thing we found in the first kind of 7 years of our journey is that it is, in the same way as long distance running, it's often just about keeping going, finding a way to move from one step to the next, identifying those kind of key staging points you need to get to on your journey and making sure you get there and then looking up at the kind of mountain above. So Run for Love was both the kind of catalyst, but also has been the kind of ongoing motivation, because it's kind of told us that often the most important thing is just keeping going, keeping one foot in front of the other, and, you know, breaking your journey down into lots of small steps.
Sure. And I think that's really important, isn't it? Because of course, as you say, 7 years in, I can, you know, look back and hindsight's a wonderful thing. But I suppose at the start, you don't necessarily have a concrete plan, right? So exactly what you're going to do, I suppose, yeah, just getting started and seeing where it goes and how it grows and just being committed to making it happen, I think is probably the most important takeaway. But I'd also love to hear, I guess, when you say modern slavery, and, you know, I've read a lot on the site, and obviously I know a lot about Tribe, I've known a lot about Tribe for a long time. But I think for a lot of listeners, and myself included, before I started to really, I guess, research this, it's difficult for people to hear modern slavery and to really know what that is. So it'd be great if you could explain to us what that actually means. And I think I'd like to just add firstly that, you know, this topic might be, you know, it's quite difficult. It could be quite upsetting for listeners. So if you've got any young children around, you know, young ears listening, if you're driving in the car, for example, just be aware that, you know, this might not be appropriate for them. But yeah, if you could explain to us, I guess, what modern slavery is and where it is happening.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, modern slavery is, I suppose the definition might be something like the forced recruitment, moving, or transit of people for the purpose of effectively abuse or exploitation. I think what many people don't realise is that modern slavery is still something that's happening today. I think it's estimated there is something like 14,000 people living in modern slavery in the UK. And that could be anything from, you know, and these are cases that the foundation, we kind of get to know about tragically every day, but it could be anything from forced exploitation, working in a nail bar or a car wash, to forced domestic work for people, and to sort of cannabis farms happening in, you know, near Henley. I mean, the tragedy is it's happening all around us, but also it's happening often in very kind of everyday plain sight places. So, you know, one of the biggest challenges we face as a foundation in terms of trying to fight modern slavery is just trying to build awareness around the fact that, you know, it's here and it's happening, and often just getting people to see that it's kind of everywhere is the biggest challenge, because people always imagine it's something happening in some faraway place.
Yeah, and maybe they even think it's just one kind of person as well. When they think about modern slavery, when they think about, you know, I read there's no typical victim, you know, a slave, it can be any gender, any race, any age, and as you described, here in the UK as well as around the world. However, statistically, we know, although there's no typical victim, if you like, that the most vulnerable and most likely affected are those people from minorities or socially excluded groups. So what work is being done, firstly, to prevent it, but secondly, the work that you do to help people who may already be being exploited?
Well, yeah, I think exactly, you're totally right, Adrienne. It's ultimately the most kind of vulnerable groups that are exploited, which is terrible. I mean, we kind of split the work of the foundation into three key objectives. I mean, the first is raising awareness of slavery. Second is trying to prevent modern slavery happening. And that's often about trying to get businesses, communities, individuals to kind of be aware of it happening around them. And then the third thing we do is providing support to trafficking victims and trying to kind of help them on what is a very long journey to recovery. As you'd imagine, there is some kind of, once you've been kind of recovered or rescued as a trafficking victim, in a sense, that's just the start. And although there is lots of government support in that early phase for trafficking victims, ultimately, you know, the true journey back to personal independence and kind of true freedom is obviously a very long and difficult journey, and ultimately recovering from extreme trauma. So that's, I suppose, the key thing we try and do at the foundation is we look to support amazing projects that are really about helping people on that journey. And, you know, it's, you know, as with lots of kind of types of trauma, it's not about the kind of 2 months after kind of recovering from it. It's about the kind of long-term journey back to freedom. So that's the kind of thing that we try and support with amazing events like Run for Love.
Sure. And Rob, how did the pandemic affect the work that you do? Because I know for anybody who works in the charity sector over the last 2 years, it feels that as though for some people, you know, obviously we're having a global pandemic, which is impacting not only our health, our physical health, but also, you know, the economy, the way we work, the way we interact, school, everything. And it felt like for a lot of charities, it kind of, you know, the attention or the energy or the funding certainly wasn't a priority for a lot of people, because it kind of felt that there was other things that, you know, were taking front and center. But we know that this work is ongoing and so, so important. So, yeah, how did the pandemic impact you?
Well, I mean, the truth is massively. We as a charity, more than any, are rooted in community. So the reason Tribe Freedom Foundation exists is because of its amazing mission, but also because there is this tribe, this group of people who really believe in the work it does and who want to be part of it. And so we rely on tens of thousands of members of the tribe who typically run, bike, come together and sporting events to raise funds. That's one of our main fundraising sources. And obviously, like for many charities, kind of almost overnight that dried up. We had huge events planned for 2020, which we had to cancel. But one of the things that was really inspiring about it in some ways was seeing how we were able to get virtual events together and how people still wanted to connect. So it's sort of strange thinking back to it now. It all seems like a distant world ago, that first lockdown. But ultimately, we had to find ways to bring people together to allow them to essentially connect with our work and feel that they could participate in fundraising. And so we put on all sorts of virtual events. And a bit like Tom was saying earlier, it was just how can we put as much energy into this as possible and you know, not give up. And I'm sure lots of charities were the same, and it began to generate its own momentum. And actually we were able to keep supporting the amazing projects we support and carry on through the generosity of the Tribe community.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, a lot of people actually during the first lockdown started to get active, maybe for the first time in a long time. I know a lot of people that took up running. I know the Strava Year in Sport report said that I think it was something like 70% increase in people tracking walks and runs more than twice a week. So we know that people are getting out, getting active. And of course, now, you know, the world is changing again. And I feel as though people are maybe getting back into busier lives, busier routines. But I hope that there are, I know a lot of runners that listen to this show, so I hope that people who maybe have started to either take on running as a new hobby or to challenge themselves with their running and, you know, took part in these virtual events, I really hope that they are still out there, still running, sticking with it. And if they are, then of course, I'd love to, you know, dive in and talk about the Run for Love event and the Golden Island Half Marathon Trail Adventure, which is taking place in Croatia in May. I will be there. I am buzzing to be part of this race. So can we, yeah, I guess, give us a bit of insight as to what this race is about, who can get involved, how many participants are there? Because I know that registration is still open at the moment, right? So people can still get involved. If they're listening to this, they're feeling inspired and they want to put some of their running over the last few years into a race.
Absolutely. Well, I think the first thing to say about Run for Love, we would say it's an adventure, not a race. The idea is that it's a community coming together. We've had, this is our fourth Run for Love that we've done as a tribe. And what's really, really unique is this group of people going on an incredible adventure in an amazing landscape and doing it for an incredible and really important cause. And the Run for Love in Croatia is going to be, yeah, going to be amazing. I mean, there's two elements to it. There's the first is the sort of full ultra Run for Love, so the ultra distance, which is 250 kilometers, and we'll see about 100 runners taking part over 6 days, and it crosses an amazing mountainous national park in Croatia. And then for the final day, there's an opportunity to join which is really the main event, the half marathon, which can be run or hiked across a beautiful island called Kirk. And the trail we're out, Tom and I have run it. It's really, really beautiful, jaw-dropping kind of mountains in this beautiful island, amazing kind of sea views beneath. And we'll all be camping out there. It's going to be a real, really unique adventure, a really challenging event, but one that anyone who's got a will to do it can definitely take part in. And I think the message, going back to some of the themes we've talked about, is often it's just getting started is the most important thing. So signing up and committing to doing it, committing mentally to the challenge, and then the rest takes care of itself. I was fine. So I just really encourage anyone to join.
Yeah, I really want to echo that, because there's a few things I'm thinking. Number one is, of course, it is great to challenge yourself, you know, to take on a physical challenge that you benefit from, physical, mental challenge. I know that people who, whether they, you know, take on these mountaineering adventures such as Kilimanjaro, Everest, you know, these things that cost so much money and they take such dedication physically and mentally. So I'm not discounting how impactful and meaningful that is for an individual pursuit. But what I really love about this event and about the work that you do is that, yes, it's an adventure for yourself. Yes, it is a physical challenge. It's fun. It's going to be an amazing, you know, week and community. But the most important thing is that we are going to raise money and awareness for this, you know, fantastic cause and for the charity. So I feel like having that element of it, you know, this idea of doing something for yourself is great, but doing something in service of others is always better. So I just really want to echo that anyone can do it. And, you know, you said it can be a run, it can be a hike. And I think after the last 2 years of, you know, not being able to travel, not being able to go to new places, see new things, meet new people. Like I've been saying it for months, you know, I'm craving new, just literally new adventures, menus, views, whatever it is. You know, I've done the same three running routes around my house for 2 years. And so I really, yeah, I want to encourage people to say, if you've had that feeling during lockdown of, oh my gosh, I just want to experience something new, you know, really, I guess we've all reflected and thought about how things can change so quickly and how much it was so strange to have, you know, our freedom, in a sense, taken away from us when we had to stay home and be in your house all day, every day. So often people will say, oh, I want to do these things or I want to try that, but it just stays an idea, or like I always say, tomorrow stays tomorrow. So if you've been feeling that, I think this is a great opportunity to really take action and say, actually, this is something I can do. It is going to benefit myself as an individual, but it's also going to be in service of others. So any runners listening, Tom, Rob, what would your advice be to someone if they're listening thinking, oh, actually, am I a good enough runner? Am I fit enough? Like how much training and prep do you need to do for this one?
Well, I think as you said, Adrian, like if there's a small part of anyone thinking I'm up for an adventure, I want to get out the English winter, I want to get into the sun, then my advice would just 100% be go for it. I think it's just the island the race is happening on is genuinely stunning. So, I think it really will be an opportunity to have a quite accessible but genuinely life-changing adventure. And as you say, like you never regret any run, but you definitely don't regret taking on a big challenge and adventure. And there's an option to hike or run it, so definitely hopefully anyone can do it. I just would say go for it, you won't regret it. And just the adventure elements is what really makes this special, the camping on the beach, the kind of island off the coast of Croatia, the sun, the sea. It's going to be pretty special.
Sounds dreamy. And Rob, are you running the race as well?
I will be running. I can't wait, actually. And I've started my training in earnest. I'm not quite as fit as I'd like to be, but I'm really really excited. And actually, what makes me most excited, I guess, is seeing everyone on Instagram or the tribe community out training, and we do lots of group runs together as well, so people can join for them. And they're always really, you know, it's really great to see, I suppose, the transformational potential without putting too fine a point on it.
Yeah, and a question that I know I'm probably going to get asked, because I always do, is as an extroverted person who, you know, I don't mind going to places on my own, I don't mind meeting new people, I don't mind chatting to anyone and everyone. So unlucky if you get near next to me in the race, because you probably think, why is this woman talking to me? I just want to run and enjoy the view. But for anyone who thinks, well, actually, I don't know anyone else who's going to be there, or anyone else who wants to do this race with me, would you encourage people to sign up solo?
I think what one of the things is, you know, that I think Rob said earlier was, I think it, what's so special about Tribe is that it is such a kind of warm and welcoming kind of genuine community of people. And I think that carries through into this race, is that, you know, I think if there was an award for, you know, the world's kind of friendliest race, well, that sounds a bit cheesy saying that, I really think Run for Love would be close to that, because it is just such a kind of warm, welcoming, encouraging environment. It's not meant to be a kind of, there's nothing competitive or not kind of open. And I think, as you say, what really bonds everyone is that because everyone has got this shared sense of purpose around fighting slavery and doing that as a kind of shared mission, it kind of gives such a kind of common bond to all runners. And I think also because we're a community, and because we're a charity, we don't really approach it like a race. We try and approach it, you know, and like we did Run for Love One, which is just thinking of it as something we were doing with a group of friends. And I think that still kind of carries through, really.
Yeah, and just for anyone listening, it's my first trail adventure race. The only races, I guess, official races and runs that I've done have always been road races. So it's definitely going to be a new adventure and a new challenge for me, which is partly why I'm so excited to be involved. I've started my training and I'm trying to find routes to run that are hilly. I'm trying to find those inclines. I'm doing tread sessions. I'm actually doing a little bit of strength training, which I've neglected for so long. So I'm fully committed. I am into it. So anybody who is getting involved, please do reach out. We're going to leave all the information in the show notes for how you can get involved and all the links to everything that you need to know about the race. So the last thing I want to talk to you about before we talk about the Power Hour, I guess, is a little bit more of an individual, you know, question for the both of you, and that is about change. And, you know, you mentioned at the start, at the top of this interview, that before setting up the Tribe Foundation, you know, you both had different jobs. So working in law, working in banking. Now, that is another huge shift, I suppose, that we're seeing at the moment, is that due to the pandemic, a lot of people have reflected on the careers that they have, the work-life balance or the work-life blend maybe that they have. And I think a lot of people have decided that they do want to make a change. When they reflect on how they were working and living before, they don't know if that is something that was maybe the best way for them. And so a lot of people, I think, are exploring new ways of working, maybe considering changing careers, changing industries, setting up their own thing. So as two people who've done that a long time ago, pre-pandemic, what would your advice be, I suppose, for anyone who is currently thinking about that, making a big change like you have? Because going from, I guess, working in banking or working in law to what you do now, it must be hugely different. So what advice would you give them? Tom, do you want to go?
I think the advice I would give is just trust your instincts. I think often you can spend a lot of time thinking about these kind of things. But I think if you have a kind of instinctive belief that you want to make a change, or that you'd be able to do well in a different setting or a different setting, then I think I would just say go for it. Because I think ultimately your instincts probably come from, you know, quite a kind of deep down belief and confidence. And I think often what gets people into trouble is kind of not trusting your instincts and trusting other things. So I definitely would say, you know, if you think, oh, I'd be really good at whatever it is, then go for it, because you'll probably be quite good at that thing. And also you'll probably enjoy it a lot more. And that's probably why your instincts are telling you to go for it.
Yeah, and I think enjoyment is one thing, but I guess doing work that feels meaningful to you, work that feels impactful to you. Rob, would you say, yeah, what was the change like for you? How different is your life now as opposed to before? Were you working in banking before?
I was a lawyer, actually.
You were a lawyer.
Before, but yeah, I mean, massively different. And I think I look back on that time, it seems, yeah, it's a completely different world, to be honest. But I think the two things I would say is, often getting going is the most important, and thinking through what are the like actual steps you can take to move you forward. And I remember when we set up Tribe, the nutrition, nutrition business, I remember we were all working our other jobs, but we set up this kind of trial where we got 60 people, emailed them and said, can we send out a pack of our prototype nutrition bars, and we're going to send you 3 packs over 3 weeks and get your feedback. And actually that process, the most important part of that process was that it just got us started. Although the product is so different now from what it was then, although the foundation and everything we're doing, is unrecognizable. In a sense, it was taking a step, and that step generated momentum, and it sort of got us thinking practically. So I think often you can spend too much time in your head. I mean, one can, and especially when I'm thinking about a big change or taking a big step. And I think actually the most important thing is to try and get out of your head and into doing, and finding a way to do that in a way that's kind of doesn't feel like you're taking a massive risk, but actually is something that you can get on board with and just get going with. And actually then things start to take care of themselves.
Yeah, and I think that word risk is really important, because I do think people still, even though the world has changed quite a lot, and you might argue that it's actually less risky nowadays to create something of your own, but I think people always have that in their mind, don't they? You know, if they're doing something, oh, it's a big risk to change or to start something of my own. And of course, you have to be considered, you know, as you said, you were doing your job at the same time. It wasn't just a case of, all right, you know, quit tomorrow and follow your dreams. Reality is, you know, real life, right? We all have to consider different circumstances and bills, obligations, whatever it is. But I always want to ask, because as I said before, lots of people tell me, especially because I talk to a lot of people about motivation, about change, about taking action in your life. You know, I don't just say it, I genuinely want people to feel empowered to do that. And so the questions that often come up are those fears, those reservations, those, the challenge I hear often from people is, oh, it's just not realistic. You know, I'm not the kind of person who's just going to leave my job and go and start my own company, but that is what they want. So yeah, I always like to ask them to, well, you know, you weren't completely, you're not different to those people. You probably had the same thoughts as them, but here you are now, 7 years on, still going strong. And I guess lastly as well, who you choose to do it with is important, right? So there's three of you. Now, I read that when founding a company, one founder, apparently not good because there's no one to give you feedback. You kind of apparently have to be a very narcissistic psychopath to be a solo founder is what I heard. Two founders, apparently also not as good because better than one, because there's more, of course, you know, two, more ideas, more back and forth, more feedback. But ultimately decision-making is very hard. You can lock into a stalemate because if one person wants to do something and the other person doesn't, how do you, I guess, come to conclusion. But then three apparently is the magic number. Now, I work at a startup with three founders and apparently that is the magic number. So yeah, what would you say about who you choose to work with as well, you know, in terms of different skill sets and different approaches? How has that been for you?
I can't imagine having done it on my own. And I think who you choose to do it with is obviously such an important question. So you spend 15 hours a day with them for, you know, years and years. And it's, I think it's so important that you're really aligned in what you're trying to do and that you really trust each other. And actually, if you have those two things, my view is the rest kind of takes care of itself. I have a huge amount of respect for people who go out and do it on their own, i.e. just one person. Because I think it's always having someone else who you feel you can pick up the phone to whatever the time is and just, you know, who's completely like on the same wavelength as you, I think makes a massive, massive difference. Tom may feel differently.
Yeah. How do you feel?
No, I totally agree. Yeah. No, I think definitely just couldn't echo more what Rob said. I think it must be hard to do something completely on your own. You must feel very kind of, that must be really hard. So I think definitely if you can, doing something as part of a team, I think is definitely the best way. And, you know, inevitably, you know, everyone has their own sort of ups and downs. And I think the great thing is if you're a sort of leadership team, then, you know, you kind of will carry each other at different moments. So, yeah, definitely think if you can find, you know, one or two others that are keen to kind of go on the journey as well, then I think you'll enjoy it a lot more and you'll probably be, yeah, more effective at it. So definitely.
Yeah, it sounds cheesy, but I read this and it stuck with me, and it basically is quite apt for the running community. And it says, if you want to go fast, go alone. And if you want to go far, go together. And I really think that it's true probably in business and work and in life, is that if you're doing something and yes, solo pursuit, you might get there quicker. But I feel like 7 years in, you know, that longevity, having the stamina, I suppose, to keep going by yourself as opposed to in a group or in a team, it is so, so different. So totally agree.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So let's talk about the Power Hour. So, concept of the Power Hour, I'm sure regular listeners of the show could probably recite this word for word, but essentially, it is about the first hour of the day. For me, that is nice and early, especially now that the mornings are getting brighter, the clocks change soon, it's getting warmer, and it just feels, yeah, the power hour. This is the best time of year to embrace the power hour. So I get up nice and early, I dedicate the first hour of my day to doing something that I want to do, something intentional. I try and eliminate distractions as much as possible to have solitude and to, yeah, start the day feeling good. So for our listeners, I always like to ask the guests at this point in the show what their power hour is like, what time they get up and what they do. But as we have both of you here today, I think I'll maybe keep it a bit briefer. And so Tom, I'd love to know firstly, what time do you get up? And then if you could share with us one thing that you love about the morning and one thing that you avoid in the first hour.
I get up at about 6 a.m. I always try if I can to read the paper for about 20 minutes quite soon after waking up. And I try and avoid checking phones and emails for the first hour of the morning.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to do. Let's be honest. It is a hard thing to do, but a lot of people say that as well. Rob, what about you? What do you love about the mornings? What do you avoid? What time's your day start?
So I get up between 5:30 and 6, and I actually quite like to start work as soon as possible. I find I think much better early in the morning. I'm not so good thinking in the evening. So I would try and start work as soon as possible and do the part of my tribe work, which is the most kind of creative or thought intensive in those first like 2 hours of the day. And then I try to exercise in the evening instead of in the morning. And in terms of avoiding, I'm similar. I always sleep with my phone outside of the room to try and stop myself, because otherwise I find I start checking my phone, so I lie in bed checking my phone, which isn't very productive.
Yeah, again, it's a habit, but I'm exactly the same. My phone does not enter the bedroom. I have a no tech in the bedroom rule. But I'm going to double click on this point around training in the evening, because that is, yeah, I can't train in the evening and then sleep. So what kind of training, how late, do you mean running or any training?
I actually run. I'm weird. I can sleep all right after it. So I'll often go to the track, like running track, and I'll normally get there at like between 8:30 and 9, and might run for an hour there, and then yeah, I go to bed. I eat quite late, and then straight to bed.
Wow,
which is quite a weird routine.
Yeah, very impressive. I mean, you've got to figure out what works for you, right, around your lifestyle and what you enjoy. But I remember when I used to run with the London Midnight Runners. Now, this is way back. This is 5 or 6 years ago. And for anyone who doesn't know, the London Midnight Runners, as you would imagine by the name, run late at night in London. So we used to meet at 10 p.m. at Westminster Bridge and run 10K. And then everyone would just, you know, have a drink or whatever after. So that's when I used to run late, and I used to, no matter how tired I was when I got home, I could not sleep. I would be wired. I'd be wide awake, full of adrenaline, cortisol. And I mean, we did used to run in a massive group with speakers, so that's probably why. But yeah, running late for me, I had to switch it up to the mornings.
I think it's pretty common that we have with lots of runners with tribe as well, come run in the evening. So yeah, there's too much. It gets everything going, and then it's hard to kind of wind down.
Well, whatever works, as like I say, you've got to fit in the training when you can, especially if you are going to be coming to Croatia, which I hope that some of the listeners will do. Thank you so much for joining, both of you. I've really, really enjoyed this conversation. And of course, I will see you in Croatia.
Bring it on.
Can't wait. Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks everyone for tuning in. As always, I really, really appreciate it. We'll leave links. We'll leave all the info that you need in the show notes. And I'll be back next week with another episode. Stay safe. Have a great week. See ya.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.